Hello everyone, welcome to the ATLIN Humans of Data series, where we're joined by data leaders around the world as they openly share their challenges, hacks, tips and tricks to help us all build better data teams and a better world with data. Today we have with us Himanshu, who is the head of data science at ATLIN. To get us started, do you want to just tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure, awesome. As Bhagatha mentioned, I head the data science team here at ATLIN. But I think one thing which is more exciting is how I actually got into data science in the first place. In college, I started another startup called Startify. And even in this startup, we realized the value of data. Data is very linked to business. And I was really excited about both business and the data side. So data science seemed to be the perfect fit for me. I started to do a bunch of projects on data science and start to blog about those projects. And eventually got through SocialCox as a data analyst, just learning how to deal with terrible government data to massive satellite imageries. My entire skill set grew, obviously, but I also started to learn a lot about the different personas in a data team.
Tell us a little bit about sort of the first data team that you ever ran. Tell us a little bit about the team. Tell us a little bit about sort of the kinds of people, the tools that you were using, the projects that you were working on?
Currently, we have a really, really diverse team. So we have about a 10 to 15 member team. And we have data engineers, we have DevOps engineers, we have geospatial experts, we have ML engineers, data scientists, economists. So all of these different people in a single team solving a single problem, that is super exciting. And I think that is what makes data teams super unique and special. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why data team is the future going forward also. In terms of the projects we are dealing with, we are creating different external data packs. And even while we were working at SocialCox, we built the national data platform, which the government still uses. And currently, we are having different problem statements dealing from predicting malaria to knowing the population of every square kilometer, knowing the demographic of that region. So I think one of the key things about any of the projects we have been doing, and this data team specifically has been doing, is the scale at which it does. And it is doing almost geographically for the entire India, and India being so diverse and all the data sets being so diverse, I think that has been one of the key things, the key problems we have been tackling with.
Got it. So it sounds like there was a diversity of problems, a diversity of the type of data, diversity of the people in the team.
Currently, everything is on the cloud. Luckily, tools have been the key parts of us being able to move remote. In terms of the kind of the internal stack which we use, the team is split between R and Python, and we regularly keep having these debates like any other team versus R versus Python. But currently, our team is using both. We have data mostly on AWS, and we have most of our processing and tools on AWS. And we do deal with a bunch of geospatial data, so we had to acquire a bunch of geospatial tools. So we work a lot on Mapbox, QGIS. So it's been, a very diverse set of tools. There's not one tool which has been solving the problem. Obviously, after we have adopted ATLIN within our entire workflow, it has eased off things. But still, I'd say moving onto the cloud was one of the biggest steps into our tooling.
Tell us about sort of what that move to remote looked like. Like, when was the first time you went remote?
So we used to have this data storage called NAS, which was in office. So we had our on office servers. Every member of the team had a 32 GB laptop with them. And so everything was in office. And on one of these days, it was just a normal day, and we had the fire alarms go off, and we had to evacuate our office immediately. And during this process, as we were running down the buildings, most of the members of the team and I was not thinking about our lives. We were thinking about data. We were more worried that someone would spray water on that. It would catch fire. That data was like years of efforts, and like at that time, we felt stupid of not having moved to the cloud yet. We went back to offices, obviously, after all the checks. Luckily, everything was safe. We just went back, and in a couple of months, we were onto the cloud, all the processing happening on the cloud. And gradually, we started to move remote. We had about 40% of the team remote and 60% in office as an experiment. It all started from that fire and us moving onto the cloud. And I think moving onto the cloud has been one of the most critical steps in this entire process.
I'm sure that's actually something that's top of mind for most data leaders. Whether you could go into a little bit more of depth into the NAS setup that you were using before and then the migration challenges of moving into the cloud.
Our NAS was like a central storage we used to have. So we used to dump everything onto that storage. It was like an on-premise server where everything was there. We had separate folders for like raw, work in progress, clean. Before we had this separation of raw and clean, we used to have things like XYZ underscore final V1 underscore final V2. So we used to have versions of finals and we would never know which one is the final file. And we also had some databases. We had some MySQL running on premise. Move to the cloud, then it was a very manual way to we build our own pipelines, ETL tools to actually port everything from our local into S3. So we just dumped everything into our S3 and a few things onto Postgres. So that is how we started off our journey. But if you see the currently, if you see there are a bunch of tools which are out there which can help you to just go onto the cloud super quick. Just for example, Snowflake is really coming up as a data warehouse. And if you can just quickly connect something like a Fivetran and push data into Snowflake from any of the data sources super quick. Before moving everything to the cloud, pick up one project, pick up one use case, and everyone who's working on that project to the cloud and see how that's planning out. And I think that gradual process is the best way to move on to the cloud.
I know that covers a little bit about the first step of moving to the cloud and just bringing your data from your on-prem ecosystems into the cloud. Could you tell us a little bit about the other kinds of challenges that you faced from a tooling perspective to get the team up and running?
Obviously, at a team level, dealing with data security when everyone's remote is again very critical and it impacts the business. Figuring out the best tool to collaborate, the best tool to have our product roadmap on. One of the things which pop up in my head is the access management piece, because access management is super critical in any data team. We cannot have access to all the data given to the entire team. As we are moving out of the cloud, it wasn't like the business was slowing down. We had to maintain pace. So we couldn't let the productivity suffer. We were a part of a fast-growing startup. We had clients coming up. We had client deliverables going. We were looking at different tools which could help us solve that access management problem. We couldn't have a single tool which could be super quick to implement and solve that access management problem. What we actually ended up doing was we ended up creating an entire flow. So someone would request for a file on a Google form. The manager would approve that request on a Google Sheet. And as soon as they would approve that request on a Google Sheet, the policies on AWS would automatically get updated. This might seem like a trivial problem uphand, but in the last few months, we have had about 800 to 900 requests just on that Google form. So if we hadn't automated this process, someone would have to, the IT would have to go on to AWS, change an IAM policy for that particular user. Apart from that, I think one of the key things in the tooling process was the power of the cloud, which we underestimated early on. We had to process satellite images and do an aggregation on that. And while we were doing that, the estimated time which showed was about 3 days to just do that aggregation. But since the power of the cloud, we could just increase our size of the machine. We just took a 250 GB RAM, if I'm not wrong. Just took a massive machine and ran the entire aggregation in a couple of hours. There are a few other things like connecting S3 into our R and Python, which we in fact open sourced and which is there on our GitHub organization.
For you as sort of a data leader and a manager who is sort of starting to deal with the distributed team and remote, like what were the biggest challenges that you faced personally during that journey?
today, and at this point, everyone's talking about problems like collaboration, motivation, how would data security play? All of this were bigger challenges which we were facing at that time. But for me personally, I think one of the major challenges was just insecurity as a manager, because when you're not being able to see your team physically work and not knowing what each one of them is working, if the team is performing to the highest level, if we are actually moving fast enough. So I think that has been one of the key problems, especially initially in the first couple of months. I personally had a lot of one-to-one sessions with almost each member of the team. We used to have these one-on-one sessions where people would talk less about the projects, but more about the problems they would be facing with their productivity, with their efficiency, with going remote. So those one-to-ones actually gave me a very good insight on the problems the team is actually facing.
I know a lot of data leaders are facing today and are trying to figure out where they're talking about how do you build human connection and how do you not lose out on human empathy when you're going remote?
So initially, everyone takes time. So I think just giving everyone in the team that time to adjust to being remote, that is key. Like, we can't expect productivity to go as same as in office the first week. The few of the things which we have been trying to do is just having more informal conversations. Even when we have team meetings, we just try to start off with a more of an informal meeting and an informal discussion of what's happening in the world, how people are dealing with their own problems. So that just helps us to bring more human connection rather than just having a very agenda-driven Zoom calls. Every Tuesday, someone on the team would teach something new to the entire team. Everything would happen on Zoom. Everyone would have their videos on. That was one of the things which really helped us also to make sure that we keep on learning and we still have that interaction with the team and we still share that bond within that team.
And on that note, I know one of the things you talked about was maintaining productivity while making this migration from sort of a infra perspective to set yourself up for remote. Can you tell us a little bit about what did you do to sort of keep the team productive and what were the kinds of practices you really adopted in the team?
So one of the things which we did from the start was we used to have weekly sprints where at the start of the week, everyone would decide their goals. And we made sure these goals were measurable. The first few weeks were terrible. So we were terrible in our goals. We were terrible in having measurable goals. We used to have very, very random things go up. And that one thing which we used to go up on the board, something like run this model. And that run this model would be there in that board for like 3 weeks. What we used to do as a practice was at the end of every sprint, we should just get everyone together on a Zoom and discuss what went wrong. And why we did not meet what we decided to do. And just having those hard questions asked to the team where everyone in the team trusted each other and would come up with like solutions and as well as the problems they themselves faced, that really helped us to over time have a very, very detailed planning process which we set up. The other thing which we came up was just being able to know their working style. So we used to do this thing where everyone would just call off what their working style is. Slack became a disturbance factor also, because as we went more, we used to have over-communication. We, in fact, encourage over-communication, but when you're working and you're working on a model, you don't want to be disturbed. But we used to always have Slack on. So we started to fix times of the days when you have Slack off. And so just for example, from morning 10 to lunchtime, we'd have all our Slacks off. So there would be no discussions unless it's a urgent meeting or an urgent deliverable. Apart from that, one of the key things which happens when we go remote is that we tend to lose the bigger focus and the bigger picture the team is moving towards, because we personally are really excited by the problems we are working towards. So we tend to lose the priority of what's important for the team at the given point of time. So it's super important, and this is something which we used to do very, very often, is mention how work is impacting the bigger goal the team is working towards, or how that project would impact the client. We used to have regular meetings with the business team and the data team coming together at least once a month, so that the business team would explain the kind of use cases that's coming up. And I think apart from that, just not having the frustration and the irritation of going remote because of the tools and the processes. Getting comfortable with Zoom calls, getting comfortable with Slack messages. So having a strong foundation of tools and the processes set up from day one and gradually improving those processes, I think that has been, again, super important.
Can you tell everyone maybe three practices that they can, as data leaders or data teams, go back and actually implement in the next 3 to 6 weeks?
The top thing which we always wanted to do when we were in office, but we never did, was documentation. And this would come up in every meeting we used to have. And there was at least someone would say that we need to better document our learnings. We need to better document our projects. We need to better document our code, our data. What does a column mean? What does a file mean? And we almost never did it because it is manual. Machine can help you up to a certain level, but it has to be, there needs to be a human angle to it. So after we went remote, we actually started to document because we were forced to document. We had our principal data scientist, she is the Google in the team. So as soon as we used to start any project or anyone uses any data set, they used to ask her if this is the right data set to work on or what's the path of that data set. But as we started to go remote, that started to become one of the barriers and it started to hinder the productivity of people. And that is when, out of need, we started to do that. But over time, that has paid off really, really well. And I think if it is manual, put in that effort, document data, document code, document what that column name means. At the end of the day, you don't know if you'll remember what that column name means and who ends up using that data. Make sure that you're over-communicating. Even initially, if over-communicating is impacting or is disturbing to you, yes, you're getting too many of Slack messages, you're having too many Zoom meetings, initially just do that. It is, even if it's not helpful to you as a manager, it is super helpful for the team at a broader level. So just over-communicate and have this like in your DNA of your team. Whenever they are starting to work on a newer problem statement, they just put it up on Slack. They are facing a problem, they put it up on Slack. And even we have started to do things like on our Slack statuses, we put up our working timelines because everyone has their own working time during their day. So whenever we are off for lunch, we just put up as a status that we are away from keyboard for the next half an hour. So just over-communicating eases out a lot of frustration. And it's just better whenever you're starting off. Gradually, you'll find your equilibrium and the team would automatically find your equilibrium over time. And the third would be maintain our speed and maintain the speed of execution. So just having something like a Scrum or any agile methodology up there to guide you into that entire process so that you know how fast you're moving. You know if you're hitting your deadlines. That is super critical because you don't want to hamper your business because your working style has changed. That would be the last thing you'd want to impact. So just making sure that your goals are set. You know that your team is performing well enough. You know the smaller problems the team is facing and you're addressing to those smaller problems. For us, like solving for that smaller 2-minute hacks, that has piled up and saved a lot of time for us.
Thanks, Himanshu. For all our attendees, join us next week for another new episode. Another freewheeling conversation, lots of actionable insights. Until then, stay home, stay safe.